Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good morning to everybody, and welcome to the Goal Achievers Radio Show, where we interview, learn, become inspired, entertain, and gain incredible and valuable insights from some of the most notable thought leaders and goal achievers in the world. As you know, my name is Phil Taylor, the author of Set Yourself on Fire, How to Ignite Your Passions and Live the Life You Love, and of course, your grateful host for the next hour. As many of you know, at Goal Achievers, we have a seven-step process that we utilize in order to achieve our goals. And step number five is to identify the specialized knowledge that one needs in order to achieve their goals. And in essence, that's exactly what we do here at the Goal Achievers Show, as we interview and we gain insights and wisdom direction from experts in their given field. And today is no exception, as we have a real expert that has truly impressed me as I've gotten to know her. And she brings a real specialty to our forum that I trust will empower and give our listeners some direction and wisdom in terms of how to move forward in a positive way. Her name is Nicole Copping-Pavarce, and she is a family law professional dedicated to helping families through transition. Nicole places respect, compassion, integrity, and education as her core foundation in everything she does, and encourages personal growth and development to assist people to attain their goals and their objectives. Nicole's approach to divorce and separation is one of compassion and understanding, thereby adding a new holistic approach to the practice of family law. Nicole's purpose and goal in life is to inspire people. Her fulfillment comes from when people she inspires rise to become the people she also knew they were. Nicole is blessed with a wonderful husband who thankfully does not enjoy talking as much as she does, as she alludes to, and three inspirational children. Her services include collaborative family law, family mediation, should I say, assisted third-party reproductive law, public speaking appearances, educational seminars regarding family law to realtors, communities, and various organizations. And here we have Nicole with us. Welcome to the Goal Achiever Show, Nicole.
Thank you so much, Phil. Wow, I want to meet this person. She sounds great.
Well, that person is you, and you, everything that we read, I know from speaking with you, is a real, genuine, and authentic reflection of who you are. And that's why we wanted you to on our show, because you have a real expertise that really empowers people to move forward in their lives in a positive fashion. You're a family law lawyer, and oftentimes, mm-hmm. you know, with Goal Achievers, why are you having a family law lawyer, you know, with this whole theme of goal achievement? But I think there's a very important reason for that. Could you give us a background, Nicole, as to what got you into this very interesting profession?
Sure. Well, I was a lawyer in South Africa. Well, I still am a lawyer in South Africa. But when we emigrated to Canada, I had become so disillusioned with the law and with people. And, with, you know, I was bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, and I was going to change the world, and so idealistic. And I realized that law can really be brutal. And when we emigrated, I was so not going to do law. It was, I would rather want to be an interior decorator or something that I really would make me excited. And we came to Canada, and we were here for about 2 years, and I realized that I missed law, and I realized there was only ever going to be so far that I could go at any job that I did with when I'd hit that glass ceiling, and I couldn't move any further. So I thought, I'm going to go back to law school. I'm going to get my degree converted. I'm going to do what I have to do, and I'm going to practice law. But I made a promise to myself that I was only going to practice the kind of law that I wanted to practice, and I was going to be the kind of lawyer that I wanted to be, and not the lawyer that you go through law school and you expect it to be a certain way, and you expect it to act a certain way. And I felt that if I've been given a second opportunity to become a lawyer for a second time, I was going to practice the way that I wanted to. I didn't know about collaborative law, but I knew how I wanted to practice. And, you know, they sometimes say you don't, you know, if you have a passion or a goal or a dream, you bump into it. Sometimes if you look too hard for it, you can't find it. It has to bump into you. And I bumped into collaborative law when I, in my mind, knew how I wanted to practice. And that's how I found collaborative law. Without even knowing about it, it was my mindset. It was how I wanted to practice. And I found collaborative law, and it's the only way that I want to practice. I as a lawyer, I hated being a catalyst into my client's destruction. I hated being the one that always had to tell them to remember horrible things about their spouses. And collaborative law is how I want to practice. And it's really true. You know, if you believe in something and if you want something, it finds you. You know, it manifests itself. And, I mean, of all things, I wanted to be a holistic lawyer. Have you ever heard of anything so ridiculous? And yet I was able to do it.
That's great. You know, there are two types of people, you know, that as we interview people here on the Goal Achievers show, that really just they identified what their passion was, and they went out and they got it and made it, you know, their life purpose. And then there's others that their passion found them. And that's just, you know, Jim Tunney was one of these people who's the dean of referees in the NFL. We had him on the show a couple of weeks ago. I said, how did you get into being this Hall of Fame NFL referee? And he said, well, I just started refereeing, you know, in high school. And I discovered that this is something that I really enjoyed doing. And 31 years later, after he got into the NFL, he, you know, became the most respected and celebrated referee, and of course had a passion doing it. And it sounds like your passion found you as well. How very interesting and refreshing as well. Nicole, you know, I was just reading something from Gene Kerr. And a quote goes like this: a lawyer is never entirely comfortable with a friendly divorce any more than a mortician wants to finish his job and then have the patient sit up on the table.
Yeah, well, sometimes our clients look like death warmed up.
But you're a different type of lawyer, you know, than the stereotype of lawyer. And it is so refreshing. You're a goal-achieving lawyer. You're the type of person, mediator, that goes in and does it because you want to have a positive impact on other people's lives and want to see them move forward in a positive way, in a very authentic way.
Absolutely. And the thing is, I never introduce myself to anyone as a lawyer. It's not that I'm embarrassed to be a lawyer, but I don't like the reactions I get from people, because suddenly they always seem on guard with me, you know, and I'm just a human being, you know, and so that's why when I introduce myself, depending who I'm with, but usually I say to people, I'm a professional who helps people through transitions. And then they'll ask, oh, what is that? And then I'll tell them. But if I just say I'm a lawyer, people react immediately to you when you say you're a lawyer.
Wow. Very insightful, wise approach. I think a lot of people struggle with that, too. If we interview people who are in sales, and oftentimes, you know, the stigma that comes along with sales people, you know, is one that's not always favorable, and I think certain professions carry that. What would you give credit to? I mean, you have these underlying values that really drive the way you practice: integrity, kindness, compassion, understanding, and they're very genuine. What do you give tribute to? You know, what spawned that? You know, those values in your life.
Wow, that's a good question. One that I haven't really thought about it. But first of all, I think that it takes as much energy to be, or it takes more energy to be nasty than it does to be kind. First of all, and if you can help somebody, why not help them? If it's not going to affect you in any way whatsoever, you know. And I really think, in particular, when with a lawyer, if you've got clients and you can get them out of a toxic space into a more neutral or a more positive frame of mind, everyone can then work so much better because you're not toxic and you're not upset. So my values, I think, come from my parents and my family. My parents were divorced. They went through a horrible divorce, but today they're the best of friends. They in fact, when my father broke his leg and he had nobody to help him, my mother and stepfather said, "You'll come and live with us and you'll recuperate with us." And his leg got better, and he still stayed with them. And, you know, and certainly I don't expect anybody to have that type of relationship. But, you know, it's people have to move on. And I think people sometimes need to be educated to move on, and they need to be recognized. And most times people just want to be heard. They want to be heard. And it doesn't matter in what area of work you do or where you are. Teachers want to be heard. Nurses want to be heard. Parents want to be heard. Everybody just wants to be heard to say, "Yes, I understand and I hear you." And I think with lawyers, instead of, you know, prescribing to people, just listen. Just listen to what they want. And it just makes life so much easier. So I don't know if I've answered your question, but that was a tough one.
Well, no, you answered that perfectly. And one can perhaps read into it in that you saw your parents go through a divorce, and yet they've come full circle and become good friends. And I don't know how much of that experience played a part in influencing you to become a family lawyer. Is that a fair question?
Yeah, I've never really liked any other area of law except family law. I could think of nothing worse than doing corporate law or contracts, or like, it just, I have no interest in anything like that. I enjoy family law, so that's the only reason I did it. As for my parents, I mean, I watched their lawyers eating them up alive, you know, and I thought, man, that's a better way of doing this, you know. So possibly it was my parents' divorce and saying, "This doesn't work. There has to be a better way to do it."
Yeah. Wow. So you took that observation of an experience and you've applied it to the gifts that you were given in order to empower people in a different way than what you witnessed, from the sounds of it. I don't know, if I'm reading into this, but we'll move on to, you know, some of the meat and potatoes of the questions here. But no one likes divorce, do they, Nicole? I mean, if divorce didn't exist, I mean, this is just one of the things that people don't like to contend with.
No. You know, and people often say, "Oh, it's too easy to get divorced," you know, and that's why there's so many divorces. And I completely disagree with that. I think it's too easy to get married, you know, and show me one person who has said, "Oh, yeah, my divorce was easy." No, it's not easy to get divorced. It's very difficult to get divorced. You know, no one likes it. Even amicable divorces are not nice. So, it's a horrible place to be.
Sure. And, in our seven-step process of goal achieving, step number three is to identify the obstacles that are standing in the way of you achieving your goal. And oftentimes, in order to move, you know, forward towards the achievement of one's goal, one has to contend with things that are very difficult to do. Wouldn't you agree?
Mm-hmm.
And divorce might be one of them. Overcoming addiction may be another. And sometimes we don't always see goal achieving in that light. But some things sometimes need to be confronted, uprooted from our lives in order to clear the way for us to really move, you know, in a very a positive direction in our lives. And being in a toxic marriage, I would think, is one of those things that can certainly keep people down. And it's very, very difficult, right?
Yeah. Yesterday I was doing a television interview, and one of the presenters said to me, "Oh, don't you wish for the days when everyone just got married and stayed married forever and there was no divorce?" And I said to him, "No, I don't wish for those days." I said, because really, sometimes people stayed married forever and they were miserable, you know. And sometimes you have to get divorced. If you've got a whole life ahead of you still, why remain in an unhappy marriage? you know, get out and live your life and do what you can do and take responsibility for where you are and move on. You know, if you could give me a guarantee that everyone would be happily married for the rest of their lives, yeah, then divorce is, you know, we wouldn't need it. But I don't think, you know, I think we've come to a stage now where people realize when things are missing in their lives and why stay in an unhappy situation because you don't know how to get out of it. It's an obstacle. So if you know that, you know, like life is an hourglass. If you've only got a certain amount left, why remain in a miserable situation?
Sure, absolutely. And would you agree that it would be wise to look at all the options prior to a divorce to see how it could make it, how a marriage could be worked out, and that sometimes when all those options have been exhausted, divorce seems to be the only positive option. Would you agree to that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you have to at least try and make the marriage work. If it's not going to work, you know, do what you have to do. But I also think that most people just don't know that there are other options besides going to court. So when people think my marriage has come to an end, they think, oh, I have to go to court. I have to get a lawyer. It's going to be so expensive. And so they stay in a difficult marriage when there are so many other options besides going to court, which are much better options. And that's why for me education is so important, because people don't realize that going to court should be the very, 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 very last option. There are plenty of other options that can help you move through this difficult transition.
Wonderful. And we're going to take a look at what those options are a little further into our interview. That's really fabulous, interesting information. Of course, sometimes divorce is though it may be difficult, it is the wisest and most positive option, because sometimes people make wrong decisions. They end up in marriages that might be abusive or unhealthy, mm-hmm. and to not divorce would be detrimental to their well-being, as difficult as it may be. Yeah. Well, when people are going through a divorce, Nicole, the reality is that, would you agree they'll be doing it twice, or they feel they do? There's the legal divorce, and then there's the emotional divorce. What's the difference between the two?
Well, basically the emotional divorce is the feelings that you feel going through the divorce. So going through the process. So that's either your feelings of guilt or your feelings of anger, resentment, bitterness, hatred, whatever those feelings that you feel that are so very real. And then there's the legal divorce, which is going to lawyers and finding a way to get through your process, so that, you know, when you get married, you have to, there are legal steps that you have to take to notify the government that, you know, it's a change of status that the government has to know about. So the legal divorce is also changing your status so that you know how to move on and you're financially separated. But for me, if you don't actually deal with that emotional divorce first, you're never going to reach a proper legal divorce. Because until you've come to terms with your emotions and until you're making decisions from the right place, you are making decisions based on the wrong emotions, which are going to affect you for the rest of your life. So so I talk about a kicker and a kickee, which is, you know, when a marriage comes to an end, you've got one person who says, okay, I'm kicking you out of this marriage, and they have normally left the marriage a long time ago. So for them, they've dealt with all their emotions, and now they just want to get to the legal divorce. They've done everything. But the person who's been told that the marriage is over, even if in the depths of their heart they know that the marriage was over, it's a huge shock to them, and it feels as though they've been kicked in their stomach. It feels as though they're reeling, you know, and they are suddenly in this emotional divorce where their life comes crumbling down. The person who they thought they are, their labels are stripped off them. They can't think straight, and they're forced to make decisions that are going to affect the rest of their life. It's not fair to do that, and that's why with collaborative law, what we try to do is to say, let's deal with the emotional divorce. Let's get everyone on the same emotional level so that we can negotiate from a place of sanity and not a place of hurt or emotion or anything like that. So, yeah, we'll deal with stuff that needs to be attended to, like, you know, child support or some finances. because we've got guidelines to help us with that, but we have to deal with the emotional divorce first. Because if you don't deal with your emotional divorce, you never let it go. You could be divorced for 15 years, but you are still dealing with your emotional divorce. You're still so consumed by what your ex is doing and that they're getting on with their life and that you're not. And people live in this toxic world because they never dealt with their emotional divorce.
So, very insightful. What are some of the steps that somebody can take in order to deal soundly with the emotional divorce? What are some of those fundamental things?
Mm-hmm. I think the first thing to do is to take responsibility for your contribution to where you are, you know, and I'll explain that further. Because a lot of the time people say, well, my husband had the affair. I'm the victim here. You know, if he wouldn't have gone out and had the affair, then we'd still be happily married, you know. And people take this victim stance and they feel it's got nothing to do with me. I'm the victim. But I think you have to take responsibility for your actions. And only once you can take responsibility for your actions can you move forward. So often, let's just say, with an affair is, possibly you have to look at what your actions were that perhaps led your spouse to have an affair. I'm not saying you pushed them to have an affair, but maybe you took no interest in what they loved doing. Or perhaps you had no time for them. Or, you know, because if somebody's happily married, their eyes don't go further than their wife or whatever it is. So sometimes what you have to do is take responsibility for where you are right now, because everybody has a part to play in where they are. It takes two to tango. So maybe an affair was the last step in ending the marriage, but people have to take responsibility for their contribution. And once they can take responsibility for that, they can let go and they can move forward. And that's a really, really difficult piece to have to overcome. But it's a crucial piece that you have to overcome. Because I think taking responsibility is really, in everything that we do in life, is the most important thing. Because otherwise we can remain a victim for the rest of our lives. And sometimes it's just much easier to be a victim because you've got no one else, like no one can blame you. You're the victim, right?
Oh, absolutely. We're having Jan Payne on our show on Friday, and she wrote a book called Victim or Victor, and it's all about what you're speaking about. It just seems that when we don't take personal responsibility or we resort to blame, we're really rendering ourselves helpless, aren't we, or powerless over the situation.
Absolutely.
Would that be a fair assessment? Yeah.
You are rendering yourself powerless because you're saying, it's not my fault. I can't do anything. It's like laying on the floor and saying, I can't do anything. Well, you can.
Yeah.
You know, it's all about choices in life. You've got a choice. You can be a victim and blame other people, or you can say, I'm not a victim. I had a certain part to play. I acknowledge it, and now I want to move on.
Yeah, yeah. And love what you say. It's not only in a divorce situation, but in life, that personal responsibility is the key to personal power. The flip side of the coin is blame. Is rendering yourself helpless and powerless. And of course, when we do that, when we blame, there's no moving forward. So that's really great. There seems to be, though, a fine line between taking personal responsibility and then self-content or guilt or blaming yourself. Would you agree?
I don't think
you can ever... Is there a way to balance the two?
Well, I don't think when you're taking responsibility, I suppose you are taking blame for a certain way that it happens, you know, and it doesn't mean that you can condone what the consequences were of your actions. You know, if we just take the affair situation, it's not your, you know, because somebody, if you didn't take interest in somebody, your spouse's interests, and that caused them to find somebody who does take it, an interest in it. Well, you didn't tell the guy to go have an affair, you know.
Right.
But your action of not having an interest and saying, well, you're not important enough for me. Like what's interesting for you doesn't interest me. part of it is you to blame for a small amount. I think blame is not the right word, but you're
not the right word. Yes,
I think you're accountable.
Yeah, yeah. Because but that word blame is a glaring theme, whether it be self blame or blaming others in a hurtful situation. I would think at least. But this brings on another word and another theme to mind, and that's forgiveness. Mm-hmm. How big of a part does forgiveness play in emotional well-being when dealing with your clients?
Oh, it's huge. And forgiving doesn't mean condoning.
Yeah. Right.
And I think that's really important, you know, because really forgiveness is it's your mental state. You know,
right.
So when you know, there's this one Mary Morrissey uses this term, let God and let go. You know,
mm-hmm.
where you have to forgive and you have to let go. You can't forgive and then come back and keep thinking about it. Like once you've forgiven, it's your release of the situation. You release it and you let it go.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that you condone what you're forgiving. It's just saying, you know what, I am not going to let this make me toxic anymore. I don't agree
sure.
with what you did, but I'm not going to let it make me toxic. So you forgive that person for what they did. You don't condone it, but you forgive it, because forgiving it's not a matter of somebody being a victor because you forgave. It means allowing yourself to let go.
Mm. Absolutely. And someone noted, observed, and I love this quote, is that resentment is like drinking poison and expecting the person that you resent to die from it.
Oh, 100%. I love that. You know, that's exactly what it is. You know, and you know, sometimes
yeah.
I look at my clients and they're going on and on and on, and I'm thinking, do you
yeah.
think your spouse actually gets up every morning and thinks about how miserable you are, about how you keep thinking about them or whatever it is, you know, they're living their life. They don't even know that you're sitting there with all these grudges and making yourself toxic, you know.
Sure.
And it's that's exactly what resentment is. And I heard another one. It's something about resentment is paying rent in somebody. I can't think of the whole thing, but it really is. It's cutting off your nose to spite your face.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
That's exactly what it is.
Empowering principles, and you sound more like a therapist than a lawyer. It's really, and I say that in the most complimenting way. You know, your
yeah.
approach is so consultative and so comforting and encouraging.
Thank you, thank you. I think all lawyers, in a way, we have to do a bit of counseling.
Yes.
You know, it's the only difference is that at the end of the day, we charge our clients a lot of money to cry, and then we say, well, we can't help you. Maybe you need to speak to a counselor. And then unfortunately, they speak to a counselor, and the counselor says, well, we can't help you. You need to speak to your lawyer. You know, but with collaborative
yeah.
law, we're able to take some of this. We don't counsel, but it's all about listening. It's that listening
yeah.
and identifying what that person needs. And sometimes all somebody wants is an apology or an acknowledgement. They want an apology for somebody's actions, or they want an acknowledgement for the contribution they made to a marriage that has ended. And so it's just listening, and it's finding out what it is, what the real purpose or goal is or interest is of your client, and saying, this is what they really want. And listening to them very carefully, like it's intuitive listening, and it's proper listening, and finding out what it is that is really important to them, and then moving on once you've found it. And sometimes people just want an apology; they want to be listened to, and that's what collaborative law does. So it's not a matter of counseling; it's just a matter of listening and finding out what is really important to your client.
Yeah, wonderful. So the two gems you've given us is take personal responsibility, forgive. Are there other jewels of insight with regards to gaining that emotional stability or dealing with that emotional divorce that you can give us?
Well, I think what's really important is, and I'll use an analogy, is, you know, driving in your car. you've got this huge big window in front of you and you've got a very small rearview mirror. Now, it's really important to, when you're driving, to occasionally look into the rearview mirror so you can see what you've left behind and you can see what's behind you. But it's the big picture in front of you that you have to focus on, because if you only focus on that rearview mirror, you're going to crash. You're going to crash and burn, and it's not where your focus is meant to be. So, and I think the same thing is in a marriage. You know, if that's come to an end, is yes, you need to look back and you need to say, yes, I know where I was, or I know what my mistakes are, or I know what happened in the past. But you have to move forward, because you can't live in the past. You can't change it. And you have to move forward. And I think that is the most important thing. And that comes into play with your accountability, with your responsibility, you know, with all of that. But you have to focus on moving forward. You can't live in the past. It's unhealthy. And if the other, and particularly if your spouse has moved on, they don't actually care about your resentment and how you feel. They've moved on.
Mm, right.
So they're not going to drink your poison.
Well, three keys you've given us, again, personal responsibility, forgiveness, and then moving on, focusing on what's ahead instead of living in the past. Wonderful, wonderful insights. Now, in order to gain that, why would you say objectivity is crucial, seeing things more clearly in this whole process, obviously?
Oh, I love talking in analogies, because I think people somehow understand it. So it might be a bit long, but bear with me, okay? So the analogy that I like giving for objectivity and how important it is imagine you're sitting in a tree and you're scared of heights. You're sitting on the topmost branch. And you're scared of heights, and you've been just clutching onto this branch for dear life. All you can see are the leaves in front of you. You cannot see anything else. You just know you feel horrible. You feel frightened. You can't make any decisions because you can't see anything. You can just see these leaves. You don't know what options you've got. You're just stuck on this high branch. And all of a sudden, you hear somebody that says, "Hey, you up there in the tree? I can help you. I can give you some clarity. There's such a beautiful world over here. Let me give you some clarity." And you know, you really want to move, but you just can't. But slowly, you're able to. When you've got somebody guiding you, you slowly put your foot down and you find another branch and you hang onto that branch. You hang onto the tree trunk. You move slowly down, and as you look up, you see, wow, it's not just the five leaves that were all in front of me. Look at all these. There are hundreds of leaves all around me. It's quite pretty. There are all these leaves, and as you go down and you go down, you start feeling more secure, and you start seeing, wow, it's not just that one branch that was my entire life. There's this huge big tree that I've been sitting in, and I didn't even know that there were bluebirds on this branch, and that there were cherries on that branch, and that there were other branches to climb on. And as you get down from this tree, you get onto firm ground where you have security and you've got a foundation, and you look up and there's this gorgeous tree right by you, but you look around and you see all these trees and this whole big forest, and you think, wow, look at all this stuff. I mean, that's just amazing. And that's pretty much when you go through this process as well, is that if you don't have objectivity to see what the big picture is, you become so personalized and so subjective that all you can see is that tiny little branch that you're sitting on, knowing that you're unhappy, but you can't move because you only focus on what you know, because you don't know anything more. But as you go through the process and you can be objective, you've got so many other opportunities and you've got so many other options that become available to you because you open your mind to it. And that's what objectivity is. It's opening your mind to other things and not taking a stand. And that's the difference between litigation and collaborative law, is when you take a stand and you say, I want my house. I want this house. I don't care what you want. I'm not giving up this house for anything. I want the house. You're taking a stand, and you won't budge. But if somebody comes and says to you, okay, I know that you want the house, but tell me why that house is important to you. What is it about that house that is so important? Is it a home you want, or is that that specific house that you need? You know, and sometimes people say, well, I don't have to have this house, but, you know, you know, I want my kids to be close to school, or I have all my memories in this house. Or once you know what it is that you really want, you can find other options. But you have to have objectivity, because if you don't have it, you can only focus on what's in front of you, and you don't know that there are other options. So objectivity is crucial. And if you don't have it, you need to be with somebody who can provide it for you.
Absolutely. And I would obviously think that this is where you come in, is obviously, you know, in a divorce, someone to try to do it themselves oftentimes doesn't have that objectivity, is still struggling emotionally, I would think.
Absolutely. And you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah,
I think
you don't
that's
know
the most important. You know, sitting up in the tree, if you don't know that there are other trees and other branches, then you don't look for it.
Yeah, yeah. And anybody who has seen the movie with Michael Douglas and I think Kathleen, War of the Roses,
mm-hmm.
Have you seen that movie? Not
funny
a good
enough,
picture, is it?
It wasn't a good. And you know what? It's funny because that movie, I mean, I was young when, I think I must have been 10 or 12 maybe when it came on. And I thought,
okay.
And I hated it. I hated it because even then at my young age, I was like, what's the purpose of all this fighting? It's stupid.
Yeah.
And I think I walked out of the movie, probably I didn't understand, it was too old for me anyway, but I remember feeling so frustrated as a little girl saying, this is so stupid, why are they fighting like this?
Yeah, yeah. And yet that might have seemed like an exaggerated picture of what can happen, but it's certainly oftentimes not too far from the truth in terms of the feelings and emotions that are evoked in a situation like that. But you offer a much more positive option, to say the least. What are some of the more amicable options that are out there versus what we would see in a situation like War of the Roses?
Okay, well, they're called alternative dispute resolution.
Sure.
So there's basic kitchen table negotiation, where if you on really good terms with your partner. And sometimes this kitchen table really would work if there's no kids or it's been a short marriage and you don't have many assets or anything like that. Then you can really just sit down together, split everything, come to an agreement and move on. You don't even need lawyers, you know. I'd always advise lawyers because, again, you don't know what you don't know. So you need to just make sure that you've covered all your rights and your obligations. But kitchen table negotiations sometimes work really, really well. I've had lots of clients who've done kitchen table negotiations and it's worked really well. And the only reason they're coming to a lawyer is because they want to get divorced. It's been like, you know, they've been separated for 6-7 years. Everything was fine, but now they want to get divorced because they want to get remarried. And they just need to put it into a separation agreement so they can go to the court and they can get a divorce order so that they can get remarried. So there's kitchen table. Then there's mediation, which is where a neutral third person guides you through the process, and they can give you legal information. They can't give you legal advice, but they can give you legal information. And they've got a whole toolbox of tools to help you come to an agreement. And it's a wonderful way and becoming a more popular way for people to separate, where they don't want to go to lawyers. They kind of know what they want and what they need, and they just need a neutral third person to be impartial to what their decision is. And sometimes they just need somebody to guide them. Then after mediation is arbitration, which sometimes what happens in mediation is you come to, in essence, an agreement, but there's just one little aspect that you can't come to resolution over. Usually it's the matrimonial home or spousal support. And so what you say to your mediator is, or an arbitrator, is to say, in essence, we're going to keep this mediation agreement, but there's one issue that we can't agree to. We want to arbitrate over it. And so they go to an arbitrator who then says, I'm going to make a decision, and my decision is going to be binding. So you kind of make a mini court, a private courtroom for you to deal with that issue. So there's mediation, there's arbitration, and then there's collaborative law, where we work exactly the same way as mediators. We use the same tools. We deal with emotions. We deal with all of that. The difference is, as lawyers, we can actually advise our clients at the table. Mediators can't give legal advice. They can only give legal information because they are neutral. So if they give one person legal advice, they have to give the other person legal advice, and then there's a conflict of interest. So mediators can only give legal information. Collaborative lawyers, we can give legal advice at the table. So there's collaborative law, and then there's traditional negotiation, where you try and negotiate without going to court. And then And with collaborative law, we sign a participation agreement. So it's the two lawyers and the two parties where we say we are not going to court. And it's an agreement that we all sign. And how that works is that as lawyers, we don't want to get fired because the clients didn't have to fire us if they want to go to court. So as lawyers, we don't want to get fired. We want to work really well to come to a resolution and you not go to court. And as parties, you don't have the threat of court hanging over you, so you can be open and transparent because you don't ever have to worry about strategies because you know court is completely out of the picture. And that's a really, really key, important thing about collaborative law, is that we don't go to court. We all sign an agreement to say we're not going to go to court. And really, the lawyers actually work as a team. We work as a team, as a support team for the clients. So we become option generators. We try and generate options for the clients. So as collaborative lawyers, we work really well together. I don't know any of the lawyers that I've worked, collaborative lawyers that I've worked with, there hasn't been one that I haven't gotten well with and we've actually fought about anything. Like, we work as a team to help our clients. And I think that's really, really an important thing. There's no egos involved in collaborative law. You know, in collaborative law, if I make a mistake with calculations, the other counsel doesn't sit there rubbing their hand and going, we're not going to tell them that they made a mistake. We're going to milk this one. No, we say, I think you've made a mistake in the calculations. Even if it's to the detriment of my client, we have to let them know because it's about open and honest and transparent negotiation. So it really is a more holistic approach. And then traditional negotiation is the next step. But with traditional negotiation, you know that the end result could be court. So you've always got the threat of court. And then, of course, there's litigation, where you know that you're going to go to court and you already start with applications from the get-go. But I've already mentioned four other options before you even get to litigation, which most people don't know about.
And that's exactly what came to my mind. Why would anybody want to go to litigation when there are those options before them that are so much more sound and wise and productive than the destructiveness that goes into a confrontational litigation?
Absolutely. And you've got somebody, and the fact is you are the expert of your own life. You know what's going to work. You know, a judge is not an expert of your life. So why don't you take control and come to an agreement that works for you rather than putting your life behind with this total stranger hoping they're going to make the right decision for you?
Yeah.
Which they're not.
What happens in a situation where one partner, let's say your client, is all for that collaborative approach, those options that you gave, but the other party isn't? Is there a way to bridge that, or is that, how do you deal in a situation like that?
Well, collaborative law can only work with two collaborative lawyers.
Collaborative lawyers.
Yeah, you can't have one collaborative lawyer and one non-collaborative lawyer, because then we go about it a very, very different way than traditional litigation lawyers. So we'd be butting heads the whole time. You're going to go the collaborative way, and you're trained. You don't just become a collaborative lawyer. You're trained to be a – there are two levels of training that you have to go through. So so very often clients will come to me and they'll say, I think it's great. I'll speak to my husband about it or my wife about it, but I'm not sure if they're going to be on board. So I've got brochures that I'll say, well, give this brochure to your husband, and I'll refer. I'll say here are websites that they can go to. I can refer them to. I'll give them a list of three or four lawyers that they can speak to, collaborative lawyers. And because as collaborative lawyers we work really well together, I also know the strengths of various lawyers. So when a client comes to me and I'm listening to them and I'm hearing about the personality of their spouse, in my mind I can picture which lawyer would work really well with that client because I've worked with all of those lawyers.
Fascinating. So somebody in that situation, if I understand correctly, in approaching you and consulting with you, you would give them information to give to their spouse, for instance,
yeah.
who who could find a suitable collaborative lawyer so that you can both work together.
Yeah, and what I've done in the past is I've written a letter to the spouse to say I've been consulted, I've been retained.
Yeah.
My client wants to be amicable. They want to do this, in, you know, if their kid's involved, with the least amount of harm and devastation to the children as possible. They would like to go the collaborative route. Please hear, you know, I'll provide them with links. I'll provide them with names of lawyers, and I'll say, please let your lawyer contact me. So, you know, I've done it that way as well.
Well, what refreshing options, and as you pointed out, a lot of people don't take those options because they don't know that it's available to them.
Mm-hmm.
And to think of all the emotional distress one could save themselves, the money, the financial, you know, devastation and the heartbreak and the health and well-being of oneself by going through this option. Nicole, you specialize in this area. Where would someone, how can somebody reach you, and what's the width and breadth of your coverage? Do you deal all exclusively in Canada, or do you, you mentioned that you also have a practice in South Africa. How extensive is your practice?
Yeah, no, I'm a lawyer in good standing in South Africa, but I can't really practice there because I live in Canada now. So I only can help people in Ontario. I'm licensed for Ontario. But if they want more information about me and my services, I have a website, which is www.nkplaw.ca.
Okay.
But collaborative law is worldwide. It's not only in North America. I'm trying to get it into South Africa. I'm negotiating right now to get South Africa trained in collaborative law. But it's in the UK. It's in many European countries. It's in Australia. So it's not specific to North America.
Wonderful. And of course, if somebody lived outside of Ontario, though Ontario is such a large part of Canada, represents one third of the population, you would obviously know where to direct them, would you?
Oh, of course, of course. You know,
and
people just have to Google collaborative practice or collaborative practice Alabama or collaborative practice wherever, and you'll probably find there'll be associations in each area with lawyers in those areas.
Yeah,
but definitely, if people want to know, I can definitely guide them.
Wonderful. Well, you have such a beautiful and giving spirit. It's truly, truly refreshing and remarkable to sit down and discuss this. What would be a very difficult obstacle or option for people to walk through, but oftentimes a very necessary one. I know you're maybe not a marriage counselor, but we're going full circle. You said something at the very beginning of the interview, Nicole, that it's not that divorce, people get into divorces too quickly or it's too easy, but people get into marriages perhaps too quickly or it's too easy to marry.
Yeah.
I found that, that, could you repeat that statement? Because I found that fascinating.
Yeah, basically people have always said to me, you know, oh, the divorce statistics are so high, it's just too easy to get divorced. And my answer is no, it's not easy to get divorced. It's very difficult to get divorced, but it is too easy to get married. All you just have to do is you have to say, you want to marry me? And then you go and you get a marriage license, or maybe you'll have a big party or whatever it is, you know, but it's too easy to get married. People, like, I think there should be, before people get married, there should be some kind of counseling or a consequence, because otherwise it's too easy to jump into a marriage without even knowing what the consequences are of marriage. So, you know, it's not easy to get divorced. There's not one person, even the most amicable divorces, it's not easy to get divorced. It's a horrible, horrible process. But I've never heard of anybody say to me, oh, it was horrible getting married. What a disastrous process. No one's ever said that to me.
That's great. So I don't know if this is a fair question, because you work on the back end of things, the more difficult process of that if last resort, so to speak. But what are some of the key insights that you can give when looking for a spouse? It, you know, Napoleon Hill, so many of the greats in Think and Grow Rich, it says the most important decision that someone will make in their life is their choice of who they're going to marry.
Mm-hmm.
Because it can truly make or break a person. What are some of the things that someone would need to ask themselves before entering and making that life-changing decision so that they don't have to come to this place that you're speaking to?
Well, I think I've been thinking a lot about what makes a marriage good. And I've looked at a lot of my clients and to see where their breakdown was in their marriage.
Right.
And I've come to realize, this is my personal opinion, but I think respect is the key to successful marriages. And I think if you start losing respect for your spouse, your marriage is over. If you respect your spouse and you respect everything about them, your marriage is good. You're not going to look anywhere else. So for me, respect is the key. So I think if you respect the person that you choose to spend the rest of your life with, you're okay. But if you don't, if there's even just one little area that you don't respect them for, think twice. Because for me, respect is, I just see the breakdown of any marriage is when my clients have lost a certain amount of respect. And you know, a lot of people have said, my mother said to me, I knew my marriage was over when I felt pity for your father. Because the second you pity somebody, you have no respect for them. So for me, I think respect. If you can honestly say, I respect this person as a person and everything that they do, you're okay.
Wow. And of course, respect breeds dignity and in a relationship. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And what about communication? What part would you say that plays in?
Communication is huge. And
yeah.
I think what happens in marriages is that people forget how to communicate. And it's of no fault of their own. Sometimes just life gets in the way of living. You know, and particularly if you've got kids, or even if you don't have kids, if you've got if your business is your baby, you know, you get so caught up in life and that you forget how to communicate, you know, and it's maybe a post-it on the refrigerator, or it's a calendar saying you got to pick up the kids at 3 p.m. today, or, you know, and you forget how to communicate. But when you're madly in love with somebody, don't you talk to them about everything?
Mm-hmm.
Everything.
Yeah.
You'll talk to them about the person you saw standing on the bus stop who was drinking a Diet Coke, because you want to hear it because you're so interested in everything that person has to say to you. And so if you think about a beginning of a relationship, communication is everything. And when you've got that breakdown of communication, your whole relationship changes. And again, sometimes lack of communication also boils down to respect, because sometimes it's like, you know, I don't actually care what you say because you don't know what I'm doing anyway. So I'm not even going to communicate with you about this, you know. But communication is key. And very often when I either do mediation or I do collaborative law, I have to focus my clients on looking at each other and reminding them, you know, they've got names. They're not he or she. Don't say he always does that. The person's name is Dave or John or Bruce or whatever. They've got names. Use those names and talk to each other. And they don't know how to talk to each other. Like, we have to coach them on how to speak to each other, because people forget how to communicate.
Absolutely. Yeah. That is so, so key to what you're doing. And a successful marriage, obviously, and of course, in the framework of respect. That's beautiful. Nicole, I have to say, once again, your website, for our listeners, I'll give it to our listeners, is www.nkplaw.ca. When you go to that website, you're just going to be blessed by the homepage and by going through page and page, and it's just full of resource and wisdom and it's a tremendous option, as you had pointed out. And you have my endorsement and stamp of approval. Listeners, if you are going through a situation like this, or if you have friends or loved ones that are considering this option because there is no other option for them to move forward, I highly, highly recommend Nicole services, because she really represents what moving ahead in a positive way is all about. So bless your heart, Nicole. It's been such a blessing to have you on our show. Do you have any final words of wisdom, Nicole, before we move on?
Final words of wisdom. wow.
We're bringing you on here for one tidbit of you know, jewel of insight.
Yeah, I think what people have to understand that when you're going through a separation and divorce, it's such a huge market. It's really, really huge, and yet people feel so isolated. And it's usually at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning where you get woken up by those horrible voices, and everything just seems to be too big to swallow. But everything has got an ending, and everything has got a solution. And you just have to take each step of the way in small, bite-sized pieces, like achieving any goal. You know, if you're going through a separation, make your goal to have an amicable separation, and then have small goals to reach that amicable separation, and work with your lawyer to let them know what your goal is, you know, what you really want and what you want to achieve. And I wrote an article based on being positive, and just imagine what you want the divorce to look like and what you want the separation to look like, and believe in all your soul that you want it to be amicable and you want to achieve certain things, because you really do have a choice. I know it's tough when you've got maybe a partner who's not playing the game how you want to play it, but there's only one thing that you're born with, and that's integrity. And you want to have that same amount of integrity when you die. And don't play into other people's actions. Keep your integrity about you. Keep your dignity about you. Keep your respect about you, so that you can sleep at night and you can always be a true role model to either other people going through divorce or to your children. And I think that's the most important thing, is that keep your wits about you. Don't say things or do things that you're going to look back in 3 years' time and go, oh, man, I didn't behave very, very well. Go to bed knowing that you are a role model and that you a good person and that you've done everything with integrity. And if you can just always keep that in mind, I think you can make the process much easier for yourself.
Words of wisdom. Truly a blessing, Nicole. And for me to add to anything else that you said would take away the power and the essence of what you just blessed us with. So with that, we just want to thank you for coming on our show. We'd love to have you back, and we'll be following your progress as a speaker, seminar presenter, and coach and consultant, of course, your law practice, with great interest.
Thank you so much, and thank you for the absolute honor and privilege of speaking with you. You touch so many people in such a beautiful, positive way, and I've read your book, and I told you before that it's one of those books that you need a highlighter, and you need to highlight all those fabulous points. And my two-year-old enjoys reading it. Can't read a word, but he enjoys paging through your book. It's the craziest thing, but I need to take a picture of it. But thank you for doing the great work that you do with touching so many people. You probably aren't even aware of half the people that you touch, but you do a great job, and thank you for blessing us as well. So back at you.
Oh, God bless you, Nicole, and we'll be taught. Thank you so much, and we'll be following your practice with great interest. Until
Thanks
next
so
time.
Thanks so much. To everyone, have a great day.
Okay, thank you.
Bye.
Bye.